This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one-man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88. Me and my 88 friends.
Welcome to another episode of Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. Today we're going to do some music, and I'm going to also be having a conversation with Dr. Gary Wright, who is the president of a missions organization called World Renewal that serves 51 nations. Gary has played a significant role in my life because 51 years ago, he was part of a team that brought a powerful revival to our city of Anderson, Indiana, which resulted in 50 days of services and thousands of people who came to Christ. Gary and I were together at a church in North Carolina a couple of nights ago, and we did this interview the next day via Zoom. I want to start the show with one of my most requested songs over the years. It's called Holy Fire.
Holy fire, fall on me. Give me strength for the task. Take me higher, close to thee. This is all that I ask. Here I am, send me forth. Fields are ripe, time is short. Hear my plea, fall on me. Holy fire. Holy fire, just fall on me. Give me strength for the task. This is all that I ask. Here I am, send me forth. Feels right, time is short. Hear my plea.
This episode is airing the week of my 72nd birthday. I remember years ago a song that Gary S. Paxton wrote. It was called, Lord, How'd I Get to Be an Old Man So Fast? Well, it's been a great 72 years, I must say, and we're interviewing a guy who has been at it since he was a teenager. He's about my age. So I thought I would play a song to all us old folks who are still trying to do the will of God. It's called Hand on the Plow. I've got my hand on the plow, and I'm walking straight. There's a purpose for it all, and a mission to fulfill, and I intend to heed the call and do my Father's will. There are times when was Hand on the Plow. My guest today is Dr. Gary Wright. This is the third time Gary has been a guest on this program. Gary is a man who has worn many hats over his life. He has been an evangelist, a pastor, the president of a college, the president of a missions organization that reaches 51 countries, and most recently an author. He has recently published a book called He Just Showed Up, An Eyewitness to Revival. He could truly be termed a revivalist because Gary has witnessed numerous revivals and been a part of numerous revivals. So the following is a conversation via Zoom that Gary Wright and I had yesterday. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning to you, Lawrence.
You and I were together last night out in the middle of a rural community in North Carolina, and that was the first time we had shared together in a service in 51 years. It was wonderful to be with you. I want to start out by just saying to you and the audience out there, I owe a deep debt of gratitude to you for two reasons. One is that you were an instrument that brought a huge revival to Anderson, Indiana, where I was in college, and that revival was a significant turning point in my life, and I have never been the same, and we know that God uses people. You were his instrument along with several others, and it set my life on a course that's still unfolding today. The second reason is that about less than a year ago, you contacted me, and we had lost contact with each other until Facebook was invented, and you offered me this radio program through World Renewal, and it's been a real joy to me to be able to do this every week. So thank you many times.
Well, you know, it's just been a really wonderful blessing for me and our listeners on World Renewal Global Radio to have you and your 88 friends join us. And it's been really exciting for me to reconnect with you after half a century.
Yes. Well, I got a bunch of questions for you, Gary, and some of them are spiritual and some of them are just curiosity killed the cat. So I guess we'll start with the curiosity killed the cat kind of questions. Tell me your connection with the Wright brothers, the inventors of the airplane. You are related somehow to them. Is that right?
That's true. The Wright brothers, Orville Wilbur, their sister Catherine, they didn't have any children. And so the connection really has to go back to their dad and one of his cousins is related to my family, and we all came from the Carolinas and into Ohio, and then my family migrated over into Indiana.
I met a man in Newcastle, Indiana, who told me that his grandfather or great-grandfather knew them as children, and that one of them used to lie with his back on in the meadow or the pasture or whatever, and was fascinated by just looking at birds. He just loved to watch birds as they flew, even as a little boy. And one of my favorite biographies I've ever read, probably my favorite, is The Wright Brothers by David McCullough. What a great book that was. And if you came from the Carolinas, you and I might be related.
That's true.
Okay, I want to mention one other interesting thing we were talking about yesterday. You went to school at the site of the gymnasium in the movie Hoosiers.
Yeah.
And you played basketball there. That was your school gymnasium, right?
Right. That by the time I was playing, we no longer played our actual games there, but as schools do, they have a hard time getting all the practice facilities that are needed. And so we on a regular basis would practice there. And then in recent years, I coached public school basketball on the side just so I would have an opportunity to spend quality time with families who didn't know the Lord. And so I coached some games in the Hoosier Jim. And so, yeah.
Well, my grandson and I went to Indiana a couple of summers ago when we were with you. And he heard about it, and he just had to go there and see it. And, of course, he went and got a basketball and shot some hoops there. It was quite a day. So if anybody out there listening to this ever rides through Knightstown, Indiana, just ask somebody where the Hoosier Gym is. That's the gym. I remember that movie where Gene Hackman comes out and introduces the team, and somebody yells, "We want Jimmy." Jimmy had decided not to be on the team, and he soundly rebuked them and said, "This is your team, and you're disrespecting them." To me, that's one of the greatest movies of all time. I've seen it countless numbers of times.
Well, you know, I have sons that played basketball, sports, and they had serious arguments about why Jimmy Chipwood didn't make the NBA. And, today, one of them's a PhD, and he's talking about he was the one who just had all kinds of arguments why Jimmy Chipwood didn't make it to the NBA. It was very real to them, the whole story.
So let's talk about your book. You got a new book. Tell us about the book, the name of it, and what the subject is.
So, yeah. He just showed up.
That's the name of the book. He just showed up.
And I witnessed a revival. And you have a chapter in there, I think it's chapter 6, where you give your story and your testimony. And your buddy Ray Renner.
And this is about revival, the whole book. And of course, we have talked about the Asbury revival and the Anderson revival in two other episodes. But it's not just about those two, which were major, major revivals that made the history books. But I read the book the other day. You come from a long line of revivalists.
Yes, I do. Almost all of my immediate relatives came to Christ in the scheduled, type revival of, like you mentioned last night, the fall, spring type events the churches had that sometimes turned into some level of true revival for God's people, and of course the overflow of God's people being revived is that usually people come to Christ in an evangelistic event and accept Christ. And in the book I use the definition of revival as God pouring out his presence on his people. And my family really sought that. They didn't worship revival. It wasn't the emotionalism of revival that attracted them, but they were really attracted to the fact that the presence of God comes in true revival, and it usually is in a way that overcomes the normal obstacles to people walking in victory in Christ, and then eventually the evangelism that takes place. And so they were really attracted to that. I call them God chasers. They really were God chasers.
Well, it starts, we were talking about this last night. It starts, true revival, biblical revival, starts with God's people, the people called by God's name, the believers getting right first, getting their hearts right, being revived, and then it overflows to the outside world. But it doesn't start the other way around. It starts with God's people praying and getting right and repenting. And in your family, it started with your great-grandfather. Tell me about him.
Well, he was a town drunk, and he was a barroom musician. He played just about any stringed instrument you could think of, but he was an alcoholic. He was not a, during that period of time, he became not a good father, not a good husband, and I think probably not a good provider. But he fell asleep, passed out one night when he was in his mid-50s, and he woke up and alcoholic delirium tremors, and he saw things crawling all over the walls and everything, and he was super frightened, and he put his clothes on, and he went out to find his wife. And he knew where she was. She was down at the new little block church because they were having scheduled revival services. And he went in and sat down next to her. And everybody was totally shocked that he was there because he they had been praying for him, his salvation. And then suddenly there he was there in church, and they tried to persuade him that night to give his life to the Lord, but he did not do that that night. But he went back the next night, and he did, and at the age of 55 became not only a sober man, but a godly man. He, the thing that he did that was so valuable is that he took his grandchildren with him because churches wanted to hear his testimony. They wanted to, and they wanted his music. And so for revival services and evangelistic events, he would take his children. He taught them how to play instruments, and he taught them how to vocalize with harmony. But in that process, he really discipled them in Christ. And he never went back to drink. The tavern owners in his hometown, where he had not only played music but drank, would come out on the sidewalk when he'd walk by and try to persuade him to come in. And they laid bets on the bar, you know, to, they said 3 weeks he'll be back. All of them who bet that way lost their bet, and our family won, because that next generation, his grandchildren, all of them, my dad was one of nine children, all nine walked with the Lord, all of them passed away with their marriages intact. There's only a couple of them that are still living. But they produced, then those grandchildren produced a just large number of Christian workers and faithful people to Jesus. So he really changed our family when he gave his heart to the Lord.
That really is wonderful.
Great grandson.
Yeah. And you told me he was very flamboyant. He could play. But he would play with the guitar behind his back and under his legs, and all. and yeah, I think you said that he transferred that in the church too.
Back up between his legs and say, "I used to do this for the devil, and I'm going to do it for. I do it to praise the Lord." So he's quite a character.
That's great, and I know that you've had ministers in your family, and your uncle was a revivalist, your father, although I think, tell me if I'm right, he was not a full-time revivalist, but he assisted in revival meetings, is that right?
My dad was a bivocational minister, and so almost, there were some times when he was a full-time pastor, but he went back and forth between doing revival work and pastoring, and most of his adult life, he had to have another vocation to support the ministry opportunities. And but my dad was a true revivalist. He stirred the church. If he was a pastor, it was always his role was always to bring a healing and stability back to the church, which, a healthy church is the goal, I think, when revival takes place, is that a church returns to health. And he was good at that. And so I grew up traveling with him. And in the book, I have stories about him. And would you like to hear one?
Of course.
I think I was about 10 years old. And he was scheduled in a little town. It was a new church plant. And we had to travel a couple hours to get there, and I went with him. We get there, and there's no one else there, but I think they had told him where to find the key, get in. And we get in there, and it had been an old blacksmith shop, and it had had a lot of history, let's just put it that way. And everything in the room had had a lot of history. It was mostly worn out furniture and everything. And the stage area for him to preach on was just a piece of plywood that was elevated about 6 inches, and they didn't even cover it. It was still just plywood with all the lines written on it for the studs and everything. And then the altar was the same way. It was just made out of tuba force, and they didn't even put any plywood cover on it, my dad looked around the room, and I think he just said something like, "Oh my," I could tell he was really taken back by it, and it was really small, so he said, "Well, let's pray." So, which meant he was going to pray and I was going to stand there and listen. That's what that was. That was what that was going to look like. So he gets down and prays, and he always prayed, almost always prayed out loud. It didn't matter what the situation was. His praying was done out loud. And so he gets down on his knees, and I'm standing there. I may have gotten on my knees too, I don't know. But it's the little wooden altar, and he began to pray, and he really was struggling, just trying to pray. And then as he prayed, it got easier for him to pray. And then it wasn't long before he really, what we called, prayed through. And he really touched heaven. And when he got blessed like that, he would shout. And he said, "Oh my, God's going to do something here." Well, that evening when we started the service, again, it got really difficult. There were a group of kids in that little town that I think lacked entertainment. So they decided they would harass the revival services that had been scheduled. And it was a metal roof on the little old blacksmith shop. So they started throwing rocks on the metal roof. Dad's trying to preach. And then there was a young lady, a teenage girl that attended. I think her grandmother was making her attend. And she was really, I guess, the ringleader of all the kids outside. And it wasn't, when we got home, I heard my dad tell my mother that this girl would sit with her legs up and to expose herself more than she should have to him while he was preaching. And it was just, you know, it was all this stuff going on in this little place. And my dad, he just kind of took it as a joyous challenge, you know. And of course, the great happening of that meeting was the night that he gave an invitation, and that young teenage girl, with a lot of noise, went to the altar and gave her life to Christ. And then she and he became teammates in trying to win all the other people in that town to the Lord. And they extended the services, I think, two or three more weeks. I can't remember exactly. And when he left town, there wasn't hardly anybody that didn't know the Lord. It had been a complete wipeout of the enemy. And it really, I think, is a story about him that showed how he approached, you know, special services that were scheduled. He was really seeking a true outpouring of God's presence, and he mentored me to look that way and to not be satisfied until we really had that.
Well, Gary, we were talking last night. You and I have one thing in common. We both have done the church revival circuit for a number of, back in our early days, holding revivals here and there. And, you know, when I used to do that, and I'm thinking about your dad and how he felt walking in there, I don't know if this was your experience, but it got to the point where I could walk into the sanctuary with nobody there, and I could tell this is going to be tough, or I could tell, you know, they're really ready for God to work. But sometimes you could just feel a resistance in the building before you even met anybody.
Well, you know, Lawrence, I've not heard anybody else say that. but that's exactly been my experience. I have said that, you know, and because it seems like every church has, you know, just like every person has a spirit about them. It seems like every church does as well. And in that, you know pretty well what needs to happen, and you get your toolbox out of your sermons and songs and everything that you have and go to work. I've not heard anybody else say that.
I could tell. Oh, and it was usually right on, you know. And another thing that thinking about your dad. Now, the thing that speaks to me about your father is his perseverance. He knew he had a battle in front of him when he walked in there and saw the plyboard. But then when they started throwing the rocks, and then the girl there. But it's like you said, it was a joyous challenge, and a lot of people would have thrown up their hands and just driven back home. But he didn't.
It was really hard work, but you could tell he had fun doing it. He was having a good time. And he managed to have a good time most places he went.
Now, John, we have a mutual friend, John K. Summers. He just turned 97, I think, last week. He was telling me that he, as a young man, went to a revival service that your uncle was preaching. And it was a memorable night because he said there was a man in the church who was evidently a real stumbling block, a real thorn. And he was a man who had some power, you know, some leadership power, but he was resisting a lot of the things the Lord was doing. And in the middle of the sermon, he fell over, just like it was knocked out cold, fell over on the floor. And John Kay said that everybody was worried and wanted to call the doctor and the ambulance and all, and the man's mother yelled out, said, Leave him alone. He needs to be right there. God needs to deal with him. Just leave him right there. And evidently, he got a touch from the Lord, and he was okay afterwards. But his mother was no help for getting the ambulance, put it that way.
Yeah, Mama had been praying, it sounds like.
Yes. If you've just joined us, you're listening to a show called Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Jr., your host, and we're having a conversation with Dr. Gary Wright. This conversation was taped on May 18th, 2021, and I had just mentioned to Gary about a mutual friend of ours, an older pastor who was 97 years old, who had told me a story about Gary's uncle. It just so happened that later on in the day, yesterday, this man went to heaven. He died that afternoon, just a few hours after we finished our interview. He was a giant of a man, and he was very instrumental in the revival that Gary helped usher in Anderson, Indiana. His name was John K. Summers. I want to pause here and play a song in his honor called First Glimpse.
It's so much more than I'd hoped for. It is so beautiful. Can it be true that I am here after those years? Waiting so long, but now I'm home, and it's so beautiful. And oh, oh, what joy. First opened up my eyes, and I've only begun to see. Eyes have not seen, ears have not heard, hearts have not known all the great things God has prepared for those who love Him.
I want to mention, there's so many things I want to mention, but I want to go in the same vein. You said something last night as we were talking with the pastor. By the way, we were at an evangelical friends church in North Carolina, and you were the speaker, of course, but I was only 2 hours away. So we shared the service together, and it was just a sweet time. But before the service, you were talking, and I thought this was so interesting. I've thought about it all morning and last night. You said that you don't believe it's the professional minister, the evangelist or whatever, who is really the key ingredient in a revival in a local church. There's usually some person in that church or in that gathering that is a key figure, and that if they just obey the Lord and get their heart right, it sometimes sparks the whole church. Is that, am I accurate in what you said?
Yes, that's been my experience. You and I have spent 50 years going to churches and being evangelists or musicians, however, we were invited to be there, and we know that we don't bring revival with us. It's something that has to take place among that community of faith, that church, that organization. The most fertile place for true revival in the United States has been on the college campuses historically. But it happens, in my experience, because someone who's a part of that community of faith responds to the Lord in such a way that God is able to pour out his presence on that group of people because they have requested it and they want it, and they want it more than anything else. And often it's not the pastor that is the key person. I have been in services where it was a pastor, but that would be a small percentage.
I hope whoever's listening will get a copy of the book, He Just Showed Up.
They can get it on Amazon in either the paperback or the edition. Or if they send a donation of any amount to World Renewal, we will send them a book. So obviously the less expensive way it could be to just make some kind of donation. We, as a ministry, we didn't want to sell books. We just wanted to get them out there and have the stories of what God did. And so that's been fun.
Just a couple of other things I want to just mention here. I thought was interesting. You came to the Lord at 4 years old.
I did.
Do you remember that night? Do you remember?
Which seems ridiculous, but if you grew up in the household I grew up in, it would make sense to you. My dad was out making a pastoral call on an elderly woman, and she was dying. And at that time, this would have been in the mid-50s, in the 20th century, and she was dying there at home, and he was trying to comfort her and prepare her as she was approaching the end of her life. And so he was talking to her about heaven, and he was making all the scriptural passages as clear as he knew how for her to know what it was like, it was going to be like as she went to heaven. And she was on a farm. She lived on a farm, and I was going in and out in the barnyard looking at the animals and everything. I come back, and I kept hearing him talking to her about heaven. And on the way home, you know, this was when, you know, you had the drive shaft of the car made a little hump in the floor of the car. You know, I was standing in the back on that hump, of course, no seatbelts then, and they didn't even exist. So, and I stand there on the hump and I was leaning over, Dad's driving, and I said, Dad, I need to get saved. And I can take you to geographically the exact spot I said that to him. And it kind of caught him off guard. He says, well, do you think you can wait till we get home? being the fact that he was an evangelist, I've always thought that was a funny response on his part. I know it really caught him off guard. But I remember he pulled up to a real busy intersection about two blocks from our house. And I thought, Dad, do not pull out in front of anything. I'm not ready, you know. And so we went home, and I knelt down at a little footstool, and he knelt with me and prayed. And I remember thinking, Lawrence, I remember thinking, wow, that was too easy, you know.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth?
You know, Jesus has made it as easy as possible for us to come to Him. I'm not saying it's an easy life. It's not. All hell's against it. But the part of coming to Him, the actual process, at least at the end of that process, is He's made as easy as possible.
Gary, I'm going to have you on again one of these days, because I was wanting to talk about your wife. You married you told me that the two of you met when you were in the eighth grade, and yep. You were sweethearts throughout high school. Is that right?
Yes. Yep. And she did not come from a church family. She accepted. I began to talk to her about the Lord, and you know, it was one of those deals where she, you know, I was a basketball player and she was a cheerleader, you know, anyway, I began to talk to her about the Lord. And then we found ourselves in a youth event where the Holy Spirit just really came strong. And, it was a spontaneous revival happening. I think it started at 7 o'clock and ended like one or two in the morning. And, it's a service where I was called to preach, but most importantly, it was a service where she gave her heart to the Lord. And we were 15 when that happened. And she has been a part of true revival happening and seekings ever since.
And there again, Gary, that's a wonderful story in that book, that gathering, what you said in the book, the powers that be didn't want a spontaneous thing. They didn't want they wanted it very structured and neat and tidy and end at a certain time. And there was an elderly man, is this right, an elderly man who sort of interrupted everything and said, what did the man say?
Well, again, he was not a clergyman. I think he was an auto mechanic, but a very godly man in his local church. And the person who was in charge of the service got up and prayed a prayer of benediction because he knew things were going in a direction that he and his other leaders had did not want this to go, because revival was breaking out among the people that night in the service. And so he stood up and gave a benediction. And Charles Pitts, he stood up and he said, there may be some folks here in the presence of the Lord who need to pray and ask for forgiveness. And if that is you, I want you to know I would love to pray with you, and I will be standing here. And he invited anyone to come pray with him. And about, well, a couple hundred teenagers decided to go do that.
That sunk the ship on the tidy, neat meeting. You said it went to 1 o'clock in the morning.
He'd been injured in an accident, and he was bent over physically, couldn't straighten up completely. And, you know, he wasn't, you know, you would have, he was like me, he was a balding old man. And yet, while he wasn't an attractive sight, he became very attractive to all these teenagers who wanted to go get right with God. And it was a fantastic event.
And one of whom was your wife. That is amazing. Oh, Gary, this time is going by so fast. Can you tell just a little bit about what World Renewal is, what it does, and you were the head of it and have been the head of it for a number of years. Well, and it's the organization that owns the radio license or whatever that allows me to do my show and a lot of other shows too that are on there.
Well, our goal is to develop spirit-filled, self-reproducing leaders and churches. You know, historically, statistically, the number one way to win people to Christ is to start a new church in their community that becomes a healthy church. That's statistically, that's the best method to win people to Christ. And it's been that way really since the New Testament times. And so we start new churches. We try to restore existing churches that have fallen off of being healthy. We try to help them become healthy, especially here in the United States. We have, during the COVID era here, we went from serving 30-some countries to serving, I count 51 countries we're serving in today. And by serving, I mean that we're developing leaders, training them. Our goal, as I said, is to develop self-reproducing leaders and churches. And so we're trying to train trainers. We will train trainers throughout the world. And we serve in a lot of persecuted countries. We serve on 5 continents. But this has really been, my input into it has simply been my wife and I's efforts to see a revival. And I call it revivalistic evangelism, where revival takes place among God's people and then spills over into evangelism. We tried to do that throughout the world, and God has used it. We started it in 1986 at the request of, it's interesting, Lawrence, it's the request of denominational leaders. And it's become far bigger than any denomination. It's really an interdenominational organization. And it's just been, wow. Wait. So surprising to my wife and I to be involved with people throughout the world that many of them we will never meet until heaven. But God has blessed it.
Well, you've lived an interesting life, Gary, from that bored freshman who went into an auditorium in February 1970, not expecting anything out of the ordinary and being revived. And now here you are touching lives all over the world. And it's my pleasure to call you friend. I've really enjoyed every time I've gotten with you. And this is what I'm taking from our time going away. I'm taking the tremendous testimony of a grandfather and a father passing a legacy down to grandchildren and children, which was the story of your family going all the way back to your great-grandfather.
Yes.
And also the importance of the average guy in a church that doesn't leave it up to the professionals. It's usually some average man or woman who just obeys God that becomes the spark of great revivals. You have built me up today, and I'm sure all the people that hear this will be too. So thank you, brother. And thank you all for listening to this episode of Me and My 88 Friends. I was thinking about Gary and his family and his great-grandfather and the legacy he passed down to the future generations. So I want to close out with a song I wrote to my grandson called As Old As Me. See you next week.
Seems hard to believe. One of these days you're gonna be full grown with your own child on your knee. Just remember how much I loved you and all the times I hugged you, and I hope you still love Jesus when you get as old as me. Some things you never outgrow, some things you toss aside, some things you just lose interest in, and some things you garbage your life. Remember what I taught you and do the things you ought to. Don't ever let the devil say gotcha when you get as old as me. Life's gonna rush by fast.
Song that